So you didn't know that your daughter's last day of school was tomorrow?
No. I found that out 10 minutes ago.
There you go.
And I got a text when I pulled into the parking lot.
Text from who?
From her teacher, who apparently knew that I was not going to remember.
Did she just text you? Was it like, "Dear Elise, this is your reminder tomorrow"?
She said, it's
when
a reminder.
You text people, do you say "dear" at the beginning?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm like sending a formal message, I don't know. Yeah.
Do it's you a text. No.
I was using an example. I wasn't saying that that's what
I really
I
hope you don't.
I don't.
Yeah.
I think you might.
I know.
But I hope he
doesn't.
Let's
see your phone.
Yeah. Fork it over.
Dear Beyond Sunday.
I sign all my texts, Pastor David Rubber Rouser.
You're right. Pastor David Rubber Rouser.
Yeah, I kind of I forgot my name there for a minute. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
All right, we're back with a Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
Okay, great job.
Thank
last
you.
Week,
oh, thanks.
Elise was briefly successful last week.
It was a success.
Yes, I got to enjoy what it might feel like to be successful if I just reframed everything about what success means.
I just took.
If I just cast off the social construct in which I live.
Yeah. Centuries of human development.
Yeah.
And just said, yeah, I'm successful.
Yeah.
I think Patrick just called you centuries old. I think that's what he just said.
No.
I'm saying, you know, we're all living under, you know,
The weight of oppression.
The weight of humanity.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yeah. From our early ancestors.
Yeah, forget standing on the shoulders of
others. I was going to say, alternatively.
They're all standing on ours.
Yeah.
Well, they're crushing us.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, but we're all back together again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sweet.
We had a busy summer, so
we'll
be pre-recording some of these.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, in our defense, we pre-record all of them. None of these are live.
We're not live. Yeah. When you
I got news for you. You.
We're not just sitting here in the studio waiting to see like, oh, somebody's live. Start talking.
Go, go, go.
If you pause, we have to just sit here in silence.
Please don't.
Don't hit that skip 15 seconds. It really weirds us out.
It messes with my whole,
I don't know what to do.
The whole time-space continuum gets thrown off.
What happens if they want to listen at like double time?
Oh, God. Cool. All right, I got a story about a crowd here.
Oh, a crowd.
Yeah. You like crowds?
No.
Who
Has
does?
Anybody ever answered, yeah, I just really love crowds.
It depends on the crowd. It's a crowd of like-minded people.
Are you a crowd
like,
person?
If I'm like in a crowd of people that I like, we're all in a mutual experience, like a football game or
like
something like
cult?
That. Like, no, not a cult, but like a shared experience in which we're all enjoying this time together, then yeah. But like if it's just like a mass of people that I don't know, no, that's
I'm with you. You know, common experience matters. Like
yeah.
A movie in the theaters, a scary or funny movie is funnier or scarier when you're surrounded by
Absolutely.
People like that in the
yeah,
theater.
But is that a crowd though?
Okay, well,
like
know.
What constitutes a crowd?
I mean, it's a large gathering of people. What do you
dear
want?
Crowd. Dear crowd.
Dear crowd. It's your text.
So terrible to say dear, God forbid that we
in a text.
Yeah, it is.
All right, hundreds watched Cheeseball Man eat an entire tub of cheese balls in New York City.
What does this have to do with the crowd? Just being
like
in the
performance
crowd.
Performance art?
It's crowd. Hundreds of people. That's a crowd.
Okay.
Is eating cheese balls performance art now? Because
maybe it's a food competition.
It's not.
just a dude eating a cheese ball.
Why were there hundreds of people gathered in New York City Park this weekend shouting Cheeseball Man?
Mm.
Cheeseball Man.
According to Cheeseball Man,
worst superhero ever.
I think everybody wants to be behind the mask.
I do not want to be behind the mask of Cheeseball
behind
Man.
Behind, like, vigilante style?
Yeah.
Defending the world from
cheese balls.
You know, like
you see, Spider-Man, who wants to be behind the mask, right?
Right.
I want to be Spider-Man.
That's
yes.
fair. I do want to be Spider-Man. Though
that's a lot of Lycra.
Really, I'd rather be Captain America than Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a better outfit. Yeah. Batman.
He's pretty
that's,
good.
Yeah.
That's the best outfit.
It is the best
Well, because your suit has the built-in chest
a lot of latex.
And abs.
Yeah, it's great.
The suit is built in for you. You don't even have to be busted.
Some of those Batman,
like a scowl.
They can't like move their neck, though. You know?
You get to
and
talk
they
like
to,
this.
They turn their whole bodies to look sideways. Yeah. Like, and that's kind of stupid. But it's goth. Batman's goth. He's
that's
the
true.
Goth superhero.
Yeah. All right. Let's start with some flyers, which have been hanging all over Manhattan for a few months now. And they hold a simple message from a masked man who wishes to remain anonymous.
Sure.
Come see me eat this entire ball of cheese balls on April 27th.
This entire ball of cheese balls?
Entire jar of cheese balls.
Jar. How big is a jar of cheese balls?
They come in big jars.
Yeah, big jars.
Yeah. You know, oh, okay.
Like the Sam's Club
hold
thing.
On. Backtrack. I was imagining him eating one of those like appetizer
with ball, like crackers,
balls of cheese with crackers. And I was like, why is there a jar of those?
No.
Cheese puffs. I got
cheese
you.
Cheese puffs. Yes.
Yeah, but in ball form. Okay.
Yes. I have kind of a funny story about those cheese balls, though. When COVID first started, you know, everybody had their thing that they
did. You go on a cheese ball thing?
I did. I panic bought a bunch of cheese balls, like 12.
What was your?
Is this the tub of cheese balls or the appetizer?
The appetizer cheese balls
with like a bunch of crackers.
And we were by ourselves in our house.
What was the like fear that you're like, I need these cheese balls, that's what's gonna save me? What
I don't know, like it's everybody
well,
had
you're
something.
Eating them at a party, right? You know,
yeah,
like, you know,
I guess I thought the world was ending and those cheese balls looked good and they were on deep discount,
sure, because nobody was buying them, right? Because nobody needs a bunch of cheese balls for themselves, right. Lessons learned.
It was a sad time.
Hey, COVID was hard on all of us.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, crowd showed up. Cheeseball Man hyped with the crowd running around holding a flag with his masked face on it.
Sure.
And then finally the time came when the man going by Cheeseball Man would have to commit to consuming more than 2,000 calories of cheddar and cornmeal.
Oh.
That's not that many.
Yeah.
But of just cheese powder and cornmeal.
I wouldn't want to eat it, but like, come on.
Yeah, I could.
One container of cheese balls, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like... I've probably eaten pretty close to that.
Right.
Yes. Like just in my living room watching TV.
I mean, the gag here...
And I wasn't
here,
even wearing a mask.
It's not that it's hard to do. The gag here is that it's dumb, right?
Yeah,
it is that. Yeah. That's true.
Attracted a crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hundreds of
people are idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. There's Cheeseball Man.
Cheeseball Man.
What do you think? Would you want to go see Cheeseball Man?
No. That is not a crowd that I want to be a part of.
Because he wants to do it even bigger and better again next year.
How do you do it bigger and better?
Well, you got to eat more cheese balls, first off.
The two tubs of cheese balls?
Maybe he needs like a sidekick.
Like Batman and Robin?
Yes.
Yeah, so Cheeseball Man and Pretzel Boy.
Robin's Egg. Those are candies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In case you were unfamiliar. Yeah. What do you think? You know, would you wear a mask, eat a bunch of cheese balls?
Did he make any money off of this?
He's 22 years old and just graduated from NYU, so no.
Yeah.
So he's independently wealthy.
No. You'd have to pay me quite a bit of money to eat a whole thing of cheese balls in front
of
a crowd.
How much would we have to pay you?
Yeah. You want to do it like a church?
yeah, I'll get back to you.
We can put you off to the side during worship and like see if you can finish it all by the end of service. It could be a sermon series. It could be great.
If you pay me, I will do it.
It took about half an hour, by the way, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I could do that. Are we trying to beat this record now? Is this what?
Bring it. Let's each get our own container of cheese balls.
That's right. How fast can I eat this tub of cheese balls? I think. Am I allowed to have liquid? That's going to be the challenge. Your mouth is going to get super dry.
You need water. Yeah.
I don't know if the masked man had liquid or not. You know, I can't say for sure.
It's like eating the saltines. You know, at some point, you just can't do it.
Sure.
Can I swap out Cheetos for cheese balls?
There's a lot of people
because the contest is cheese balls
that go and watch those dudes eat like hot dog. Contests.
Yeah.
You know, that's a thing. Like, that's a real thing in America.
Have you seen the like two ladies that signed up for the Memorial Day hot dog eating contest and just like slowly ate two hot dogs for free because they just wanted hot dogs? Yeah. It's just like,
I don't think
they
provide like mustard or anything. Like
right.
That,
that's kind of awesome. I like that.
The guy who does it, like, it's pretty. It's like impressive in the tone.
It's horrible
way.
To watch.
I've heard interviews with him where he's like, I just trained my mental state to think I can eat this many hot dogs. And it's like 60 something stupid. And I'm like, sure. And like,
but then what happens after? Like,
that's
always
my
question.
I don't want to think.
What glory. Is the rest of your day like?
Bathed in hot dog glory. Right? That's what happened to Cheeseball Man, right?
He wants to be known
for more than just a culinary conqueror. I clean up the city. I pick up trash, you know. When I see people they need to, you know. There you go. Words of a true hero.
That's it.
I feel like, are we concerned about Cheeseball Man's mental state of health? I feel like something's going on here.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem like normal human behavior.
Right. I mean,
I think unfortunately eating a bucket of cheese balls is normal human behavior.
That was not the alarming part.
I mean, this is a fresh graduate from NYU.
Yeah.
This is the next generation.
Got the world in front of him.
Yeah. This is. I'm going to wear a mask.
The world is your cheese
trash.
Ball.
Yeah.
The world is my cheese ball. It's true.
What would your spouse say if you're like, hey, you know what? This Thursday afternoon, I'm going to go down and see a dude eat cheese balls.
I don't think mine would be that surprised.
You go to Central Park.
Yours would go with you.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, would we'd Amanda? Bring our own snacks.
Would Amanda go with me? No, she would question my life choices. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Mine too. All right, there you go. Crowd cheese balls.
Maybe they just want to stay home and eat cheese balls while you're out.
Maybe.
Maybe. All right. So we've got a friend here at Relevant and a friend from Religious News Service.
Double articles. Friends.
And they're both interviewing the same person. Oh. So,
this is like when you find out that you have like multiple connections to another classmate. You're like, right. Oh, we both know these people.
Mutuals.
And, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. You might also like. Yeah.
Here's the thing about this thing that's interview that I think is interesting.
Okay, what do we are going to tell them what it is?
Yeah, sure. The truth behind God's many metaphors for God.
Okay, metaphors for God. Got
metaphors
it.
For God. And they're interviewing the author of Wearing God, and her name is Lauren Winner.
Huh. She's a winner.
No. She's what's a winner. The funny part of that? Yeah.
It's a funny name. Come on.
Here's the thing, though. Relevant's interview was on May 21st, and Religion News Services was on March 25th from 2015. So, so she's got a lot of time to talk about these two things.
Right.
But we're going to talk about metaphors for God. That's like, what we're going to do.
Those are timeless.
Yes.
Timeless metaphors.
All right. Let's ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Why does the Bible include metaphors for God? And includes a lot.
That's good, because I thought your first question was going to be, what is a metaphor? And I was going to have to say, it's like comparing stuff.
I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
All right, so why does the Bible use metaphors for God?
Sorry, first, let's start with, what is a metaphor?
What is a metaphor?
All right, English person, go.
So a metaphor is it's descriptive language, right? So you're saying that something is like something else.
No, that's a simile. If you use like or as, it's a simile.
Well, it's no, the same thing.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that is the function of a metaphor, right?
I'm sorry, yeah.
So you can say God is the wind, right? Or, you know, so I think that's one maybe in the Bible.
Probably.
Somewhere. You're supposed to know this.
Sounds
not
biblical.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of metaphors in the Bible. I don't know that I know all of them. That's, yeah.
Generally, the purpose of a metaphor is to expand your understanding of something, right?
Yeah,
or to see something in a different light.
Yeah. So. Or to try to put understanding to something that can't be understood, which is where I think we go with God, right? Like, God is so expansive, so beyond our understanding, that the only way that we really have to talk about God is in metaphor,
mm-hmm.
because we can't, human language cannot express God.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that metaphors can be very like finite. So you can say within a sentence, like, God is the wind, or metaphors can be bigger and encompass like an entire story, right? Like an entire story can be a metaphor for something.
Love it.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So
I feel like I'm in freshman English again. I love this. Yeah. It's like great.
Give me some cheese balls.
Yeah.
All right. So we can acknowledge that's. I think we answered the question of why does the Bible use a lot of metaphors for God?
Yeah.
God is complex. The metaphors make a complexity a little bit easier to understand, you know, or at least to connect to me on a human level, right?
Yeah, they give us a window into something that we can't fully understand. Yeah.
So let's go through. Let's do some biggies.
Okay.
What are the biggies when it comes to metaphors for God in the Bible?
Oh, God is a bridegroom.
Sure.
That's a big one. There's church is a bride.
Yes.
Yep. Let's see, metaphors for God. God, I mean, throughout the Old Testament, we get God as wind, we get God as storm, we get God as, I think somewhere it's like, God as the wild dog, I think, comes up somewhere.
These are not biggies. These are not the biggies.
Those are several of the biggies. Those are
wild dog is not the biggies.
Wild dog is not. But
I'm going to say, Father, how about that one?
Oh, like, yeah.
That's a biggie. That's going to be probably the most popular of the metaphors for God.
Fine. I was.
Father, judge,
king. That's going to be another one. Shepherd. These are the big boys when it comes to metaphors for God.
You're being shamed right now.
I am being shamed. The problem is that, like, we forget that those are metaphors. I think, like, and so even, like, they definitely are. You're absolutely, but, like, they're so commonplace at this point that I no longer think of them as metaphor. And yeah.
Sure.
So I hold that as my own fault. But you're absolutely right. Those are the biggies. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, those are not ones that the Bible will turn to often.
Yes.
And kind of describing, you know, humanity's relationship with God, kind of like a parent, kind of like a spouse, kind of like a king.
Sure.
kind of like a shepherd, you know, yeah. Like yeah.
Not so, only like any of those things, but kind of like all of those.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're going to hit those a lot. I mean, even Jesus will kind of utilize all four, you know, it's kind of like his, you know, the relationship between God and humanity is kind of like this. This is about what it's like. Right. But, you know, we can kind of see even in those, even in the biggies, there is some nuance on all of those. Right.
Sure.
We definitely see, you know, a hierarchy. You know, and based on a biblical perspective, on all four, you know, like that God is above, humanity is below. Again, even biblical perspective of marriage, that's what it's going to look like. You know, you know, or at the culture of the time, you know, that's what it looks like.
Yep.
So, so in her book here, Wearing God, Clothing, Laughter, Fire, and Other Overlooked Ways of Meeting God, she kind of goes into kind of different metaphors or different ways that kind of we kind of connect to God.
Okay.
And so she is going to kind of more explore these kind of things like God is like wind, a wild dog, a hen.
A hen?
Yeah, a mother hen.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like a mother hen, I want to gather my brood.
Yeah.
Bread, clothing, all these are kind of different ways that the Bible says like God is kind of like these things. You know, like, or the biblical authors are like, yeah, this kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
yeah.
Why do we have... We have these biggies. Why do we need these littlies to kind of jump into these metaphors? Why is God like a wild dog?
Yeah, I would be interested in seeing or hearing that exact passage that's referencing that because I'm not.
Let's Google it. All right.
Well, while you're Googling that exact passage, I think you need every author throughout the biblical story is doing their best to express God in their context, right? And so in their context, maybe father, judge, king doesn't fit. And so they're saying, what is the experience that I have that people in my context connect to, right? And so authors do this all the time, even now, right? We pick up on similar themes and express them in new ways because we're in a new time and in a new context. And so I think that's the purpose of these small ones. And some of them catch wind and, you know, get carried forward. Like, oh, father. Yeah, lots of people are connecting to that.
Yeah.
Because everybody, good, bad, or otherwise, has a father, right? Whether you knew that father, whether that father is great, terrible, whatever, right? You had a father.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you came into this world. And so everybody at some level can connect to that. So that one maybe caught more energy behind other people connecting to it as well, as opposed to wild dog, which maybe some people don't. I've never met a wild dog. I don't have a lot of wild dog experience, right? That's...
Yeah, I mean, that is a key component of a metaphor being effective, right? Is that people having enough experience with that subject matter to be able to say, oh, I understand what they're trying to say here.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody who's never encountered a wild dog, that's very like amorphous and maybe doesn't do a whole lot for you.
Yeah, I mean, even now, right, if I did a sermon and I did a metaphor that compared God to some uniquely Texas thing, like, I don't know, barbecue or something, like somehow connected to that. Like, in this context, people are like, oh, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But if I'm doing that in Ohio, people are like, what? Like, that's just not our, you know, we don't get it. And so different metaphors fit in different places.
Yeah.
But Texans and Ohioans, we all got dads.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I mean, I can say I couldn't find a good verse that suggests that God is like a wild dog, but the author suggests, you know, I've read
apparently
that book.
It's in there somewhere,
but
we'll have to go read Winner's book.
Yeah.
Be a winner.
Do you think that's her married name, or do you think that's like, because if that's like your given name, do not change your name when
you get married. You keep that forever.
I would change my name to that.
That's real bad juju to drop that one.
Sure. Or, you know, like, yeah, if you meet a person with the last name Winner, you're like,
I don't care.
Let's get married.
Were you born a winner?
Put a ring on that right now.
Or were you made?
That's right.
Anyway. You know, I think when we kind of latch on to the biggies metaphors with God, you know, and again, there's a reason those are the big ones, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason the biblical authors like those metaphors. They like how they look. Again, I think it's contextually probably most biblical readers or hearers would get it. You know, they would get what it means to be a king. They get fathers, they get shepherds, you know, they get husbands, right? Like, they just get it. And so, like, but when we limit God to those biggies, I think we're limiting kind of, we're taking this cosmic God and kind of like saying, like, well, this is who he is in these kind of relationships. And we kind of just, it does limit it. And I also think for those out there who would struggle to see God as father or bridegroom, you know, I would also understand that that would make it sometimes I mean a limitation, right? Like, so what happens, you know, as we kind of deviate from this article here, what happens, do you think, when people, the metaphor, God is like a father, but they're like, my father sucks. Like, how do we utilize that metaphor still in this kind of context? Or should we?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, it's a valuable question. And I always wrestle with it because I don't have that experience, right? I was fortunate that I had a great dad. And and so like for me to have that, it's always been an easy way to connect. I think part of it is to remember, like, just because your dad was terrible does not mean that all dads are terrible, right? Yeah. And does not mean that that's like how we have to understand everything, right? Like, you know, if you have a favorite sports team that's terrible, that doesn't mean all sports teams are bad, right? You can choose a new sports team and you can and cheer for a winning team or winner. And so I don't want to like make light of it, but in some ways it's like, hey, your dad was not what it was supposed to be. God is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that, I don't want to seem dismissive because it's much more complicated than that. But in some ways, it's also not more complicated than that. It's also okay to say that's not the metaphor that I connect to.
Right.
And
yeah.
to look, you know, to look for other things. Like, okay, father doesn't work for you. How about wild dog?
here's an option. Have you considered?
But, you know, and like, just because God is like a father doesn't mean God is not also like a mother. Like, did you have a great mother? Like, okay, sure. Then look at like God as the mothering hen is a great example of how we think about that, right? And there are other places where God leans, I think, mother bear and other, you know, or she bear or something like that. I don't remember exactly how it says it. But yeah, there are those places where if this is not the metaphor that's working for you, okay, that's all right. You don't have to connect through that one.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's not true. It just means that doesn't have to be the way that you connect to God.
Right.
That's okay.
Yeah. I think we get into some kind of interesting trouble when we land solidly on one metaphor and kind of toss the rest out the window, right?
Sure.
Like, there are many people that I've known who have landed heavily on God as the judge and have forgotten God as the peacemaker. You know, God is the shelter from storms, that kind of stuff. And it just, it's really interesting how taking one metaphor and ignoring the rest warps your sense of who God is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, they also have a warped sense of what God as judge is in my experience, right?
Yeah.
So God as judge is different, perhaps, than what God as judge in the Bible actually is portrayed as. Yeah.
Well, and conveniently enough, the Bible also portrays Jesus as advocate,
right?
Kind of like your lawyer,
yeah.
Right.
That's if you're expanding on that law metaphor, like you're not standing before the judge alone.
Yeah,
right.
You're standing before the judge with your lawyer speaking on your behalf.
Yeah,
and that's Jesus.
In fact, the lawyer is even saying, "Whatever you're going to do, this person do it to me instead." Right.
Yeah.
In some ways.
So,
I wonder what his retainer is.
Yeah.
Did Jesus pass the bar? Coming up next on Sunday.
Or did he do the Kim Kardashian law school?
Kim Kardashian has a law school?
Oh, sweet summer child. Do you know about Kim Kardashian's law endeavors?
I don't, but we don't need to get into this.
Okay, we'll see that later.
Yeah.
I think, too, that there will be seasons where like some metaphors are going to matter more.
Sure.
Like, one of the metaphors for God is a great physician.
Mm-hmm.
And admittedly, that's not one that I really connect with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest. Like, I just don't really have that kind of connection. But I also have spent a few moments of my life, you know, with those that, you know, holding the hand of somebody who is dying, you know, like, or who is facing a life-threatening illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so those who are experiencing that themselves or experience that often with others, seeing God as a great physician, maybe is far more comforting to them in those moments than it is to me in my day to day.
Sure.
You know, I think that that idea, like this metaphor of who God is and how God responds, like, is not always just for me, right? Like, it's for those who need a great physician, who need to see God as the healer. And I don't need to see that right now. And so that's one that I kind of can easily put on the back burner and focus in on metaphors that are closer to ones that I like. All right. Are there any metaphors for God that you personally like?
That we like. Okay. God is wild dog is becoming a new favorite.
Right? Well, we got to find it, right? We got
to
find it.
You have to look for
that. That's the elusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I tend towards God as parent. Sure. I think that's really, I use parent intentionally because I think mother and father both bring a lot of value to that conversation. And I think that's one for me that I've leaned into a lot in life. I would, like you, Patrick, I would say that there are plenty of times when I've been with other people and just having these metaphors kind of in my back pocket, being able to give people, you know, different ways to connect to God, that has been really valuable.
There's one, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is, but I think Hagar says it when she has been cast out by Abraham into the desert and God meets her there. It's like God who sees or something.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that one's kind of particularly nice.
Mm-hmm. Cause, I mean, Hagar's story, right, is that she was basically abused by Abraham and Sarah, right?
Yeah.
And has this child and then is kicked out and thrown into the wilderness to die.
Right.
She leaves her son off, some distance away that so that she doesn't have to watch him die and so that he doesn't have to watch her die. And then God shows up and she refers to God as God who sees. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, there's a metaphor in the book of Revelation that I really like where John is getting a message from one of the angels and says, there's a scroll that can't be opened. And they're like, oh, nobody can open it. Everybody's crying. And the angel's like, look, the Lion of the tribe of Judah is coming to open the scroll. And John looks and he sees a lamb that's been sacrificed.
Yeah.
And I love that those two imageries like paralleled with one another, like both representing who Jesus is, the lion and the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
I think is just, I think that's one of the, easily one of the moments where the Bible is like, the biblical author's like, yeah, they're cooking. They're cooking with this metaphor right
it's
here.
It's a good one.
They're nailing it, And like we have 2,000 years of people extrapolating on like lion and lamb imagery. Mm-hmm. But like that's like, they're right there at the beginning, right? Like figuring out like this is these two personhoods of Jesus, both of these things, a conqueror and the sacrifice, right? Like both of those two things at once, I think is just a really powerful metaphor.
Yeah. And the conqueror through the sacrifice, right? Like, it's not like, oh, there was a lion and because there was a lion, now there's a lamb. It's the lion is the lamb. Because there's a lamb, we get this image of the lamb.
So when I worked at summer camp, all of our cabins were named after names of Jesus.
That's fun.
So
okay.
You're an expert. Did you have a wild dog cabin?
We did not. Let's see if I can remember all 12.
Let's do it.
Way, Truth, Life, Wonderful Counselor, Suffering Servant. Who wants to be in that cabin?
No kidding.
Womp womp.
The Wonderful Counselor, that's typically one of the girls' cabins. And whenever like, is the Wonderful Counselor here? We have to ask. And then all the kids would be like, yeah, she is. That's what they say.
That's fun.
Cute.
That's
yeah.
We have The Rock.
Sure.
The Anchor.
Anchor?
Yeah,
is Jesus referred to as Anchor?
You bet.
Okay.
That's all the girls got Anchor tattoos there for a while. That's what that was from.
Yikes.
Legitimately,
says
that was
mom.
A big thing. Yeah, yeah, on the bicep.
Yeah. Like Popeye.
Right.
All right. You're at 7. How are you doing?
Yeah. The light.
Light. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Uh huh. All right, I got 8, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's
better than I could do on the names of cabins in my camp.
I haven't been there in like 11 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, good job. Well done, you.
Yeah.
There's a song, right?
That's about the like names of Jesus?
He's the Lord of Lords, King of Kings.
Oh, yeah,
Mighty
sure.
Mighty God.
It's Prince of Peace.
Yes. Yeah, that's what it is. Song. Prince of Peace. That's another one.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Yeah.
Horn of David.
That's right here.
Right over his shoulder.
Yeah,
got a list.
I've got a list
of all the ones to end on.
I felt like it deserved to be thrown out there.
Yeah.
So let me just ask this question as Patrick's is looking over his list.
Sure.
Like when we're thinking about modern metaphors for God, you two gonna be all right over there?
Yeah, we're good.
When we're thinking about modern metaphors for God, like, are there images that have come out of, more recent context in the last 2,000 years that we find helpful? Right? I mean, because our understanding of God is not limited by metaphors that are in Scripture. We can come up with other metaphors even now.
Yeah,
so have you experienced modern metaphors that are helpful?
Oh.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, like, obviously, Jesus as Superman.
Sure.
I think, like, most of the movie or TV imagery, especially of a sacrificial character,
sure,
is drawing on, kind of like Christ-like imagery, whether the authors intend to or not. I believe they are. It is like
connecting
to that. So I think that is certainly there.
Mm.
I think one that influenced a lot of people that is very definitely like leaning into biblical metaphors is the Chronicles of Narnia, right? Mm, like, sure. It's very obviously Aslan is supposed to be the Christ character. Yeah, yeah. He is a lion, like all of that. So, I mean, I think that kind of exists in a lot of our collective psyche as kids that grew up, you know, reading those books.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's a great point. Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I was thinking about this. I think, yeah, you know, the literature and those pieces drawing on Christian, I think it's interesting, right? Those draw on the Christian image, to put it in a different way. But I can't think of like a modern unique metaphor of like just someone who's like, this is what God is like, that has really stuck, right? Like, you know,
sure.
Preachers and things like that, I think we do this all the time in our various ways of trying to understand it. But like, I can't think of a new one that's just stuck and be like, yeah, this is the way that we should think about and experience God in a meaningful way now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's because the Bible has done them all. I just think it's really hard. You know,
sure.
It's hard to get that to stick, and it's hard to get it to stick beyond like a small little moment in time.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's good or bad. That's just the observation.
Sure. Yeah. I think I think that's okay. You know, like some of these they're classics, right? You know,
sure.
For a reason. Yeah.
The classics are good.
Sure. All right. Well, the importance of metaphor in the Bible, we got a lot of different ones and one of the things that kind of change and shape how we look at God. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, if you've got a metaphor that you particularly like for God, we'd love to hear about it. You can send that to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And you, of course, can find all of our episodes where we've probably talked about God and other types of metaphors in the past, probably, at beyondsundaypodcast.com. That's where they are.
Probably.
I don't know. At some point, I'm sure we've used metaphors for God. I don't know.
Probably. Yeah.
We're so confident. I love it.
I'm sure we have referenced God as a metaphor.
We have definitely talked about God before on this podcast.
There it is. Yes. That we can say with certainty. Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.